the air in the boardroom always smelled like expensive mahogany and stale espresso, a scent I used to associate with success but now only makes me want to gag. I remember sitting there, smoothing out my skirt, feeling the weight of my Puerto Rican heritage, like a shield I had to polish every single morning just to be seen as professional. Being the head of marketing wasn't just a job for me, it was the realization of a decade of grinding. Then came Julian. He was the kind of white Spanish man who carried himself with an effortless old-world arrogance. A guy who treated the office like his personal patio in Madrid. From the day he joined as the new VP of operations, the atmosphere shifted. It wasn't a sudden explosion. It was a slow, deliberate leak of poison into the vents. He never said anything I could take to HR. That was his superpower. He didn't make crude jokes or touch me in ways that left bruises. Instead, he used the space between words. He would lean into my office, his hand resting high on the doorframe, blocking my exit without ever actually standing in my way. He'd smile that thin, practiced curve of the lips and tell me my dress was bold for a Tuesday. When I'd ask what he meant, he'd just chuckle and walk away, leaving the implication hanging in the air like humidity before a storm. It was constant. If we were looking at a spreadsheet together, he'd lean in just close enough that I could feel the heat radiating off his chest, his voice dropping to a low, intimate, vibrating hum that had nothing to do with quarterly projections. I tried to keep it professional. I tried to be the good Latina. Tempered, calm, twice as smart as everyone else in the room, but Julian knew exactly how to poke at the edges of that composure. He'd call me into his office at 6 p.m., after most of the lights had dimmed, claiming there was a crisis with the logistics chain. I'd walk in, and he'd be sitting there with a glass of scotch, his tie loosened, looking at me like I was the main course. "Sit, Elena," he'd say, gesturing to the chair directly across from him. "You work too hard. A woman like you should be appreciated, not just utilized." It sounded like a compliment, but it felt like a threat. When I told him I'd prefer to discuss the logistics and go home, his face would harden for a split second before the mask slid back on. "So serious," he'd sigh. "Why so defensive? It's just a conversation." I went to my director, a woman I thought would understand. I told her I felt cornered. I told her Julian was making things uncomfortable. She looked at me with this pitying clinical gaze and asked for dates, times, and specific quotes. I told her about the way he looked at me, the way he hovered, the way he made sure we were always alone before he dropped those veiled comments about my passion and how it could be channeled. She sighed and leaned back. "Elena, he's European. They're more expressive. Without a physical advancement or a documented verbal threat, this sounds like a personality conflict. Maybe you're just misinterpreting his cultural style." Personality conflict. Those two words felt like a slap in the face. It was the corporate version of gaslighting. Suddenly, I was the problem. I was the one being difficult or sensitive. Meanwhile, Julian leaned into the narrative. He started telling people I was high-strung and hard to collaborate with. He did it with a sympathetic tilt of the head, making himself look like the patient executive dealing with a volatile subordinate. He was erasing my competence in real time, and he was doing it with a smile. The breaking point happened in the elevator. It was late, raining, the kind of night where the city feels like it's closing in on you. I hit the button for the lobby, and just as the doors were closing, Julian's hand shot through. He stepped in, smelling of rain and expensive cologne. He didn't press a button. He just stood there, staring at me in the reflection of the polished chrome doors. "You know, Elena," he whispered, stepping into my personal space until I was backed against the railing, "life would be so much easier for you here if you just stopped fighting the vibe. You're a beautiful woman. I'm a powerful man. It's a natural alignment." I felt my heart hammering against my ribs. I looked him dead in the eye and told him to get away from me. He didn't move. He just grinned. "Get away. We're in an elevator. Carinito. There's nowhere to go." When the doors opened, I bolted. I filed a formal complaint the next morning. The investigation lasted 2 weeks. they interviewed Julian, who laughed it off as a friendly chat between colleagues that she took the wrong way. He told them I had been acting erratic lately, probably due to the pressure of the role. They interviewed the staff, who had seen nothing because Julian was a ghost when others were watching. In the end, HR sent me a memo. Inconclusive. No proof. No witnesses. Just a personality conflict. They offered to move my desk to a different floor, as if physical distance would heal the fact that they had let a predator maintain his hunting grounds. I quit 3 days later. I walked out with my head high, but my soul felt scraped raw. Julian stayed. He's probably in that mahogany boardroom right now, leaning over someone else's shoulder, waiting for them to notice the silence between his words. I learned the hardest lesson of the corporate world that year. The system isn't designed to protect the person who's right. It's designed to protect the person who's smart enough to never leave a paper trail. They want the proof to be a smoking gun, but usually it's just a slow, cold suffocation that nobody else can see.